Your SteveJonesShow.com audio is coming up next. Audio and podcast of The Steve Jones Show, a service of Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is The Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome to the show. Great to have you with us on this Wednesday afternoon. But another big Kevin Hurt panic day. But then again, aren't they all?
Why am I panicked today?
You woke up.
Well, all right. Can't argue with that, I guess. I did.
What day don't you panic?
I don't panic on Sundays.
When the Steelers are playing, you don't panic.
No. I just get angry. I don't panic. I just get angry.
So you finally have admitted you have anger issues.
Emotional attachments.
So now you're admitting you have emotional issues.
Yeah, well, all right. I'll tell you. I can't lose it. I can't win that one. So, yeah, emotional issues. That's a good way to put it. Yeah.
But the number, by the way, on the Lenape Solar Hotline is 1-800-795-9565. We start out with an email, stevejonesshow.com. Yes, there's an email that was sent. Can you believe that?
We're getting
a lot of emails lately, as a matter of fact. A lot of emails. Let's see. Where is it here? This thing before.
Now, the question is if the host can find it.
No, I have it.
All right.
I have it.
Look under E for email.
Hmm?
Look under E for email.
No. This has to do with our Greg Gross discussion yesterday.
Yes,
and that's what it's about. And basically, you know, the bottom line is, as they said, you lose.
See, I wondered how long it would take you to read this email. And here we are 2 minutes into the show, and boy, we jumped right into that one.
Well, I thought you wanted to get to the email right away.
Yeah, this time it worked right in your hands, didn't it? All right, go ahead. Did you find it now?
Basically, it just says you lose.
No, there's more to it than that.
Johnny Callison's a better player.
He's a much better outfielder, power hitter, and all-around player.
Yes. That's what the email says.
Now, before you read the rest of it, here's what I was the point I was trying to make yesterday with you. And Robert can chime in on this, too, because it kind of relates to his email. Since we have a backup catcher on this particular list that we were referring to, shouldn't there be a pinch hitter position the way you would make an all-time football team with a specialty player or a special teams player? Couldn't that be considered used in the analogy that Greg Gross could be the pinch hitter and use that as a special teams type player?
You're kidding, right?
No, not at all. I mean, when you do a football team, there's always like a kick returner on an all-time football team list. And odds are he's not the same guy that played wide receiver or running back or whatever, because it was a specialty position. So you add a specialty position to recognize that type of player. And that's what I was saying needed to be done on this list. We have 12 pitchers and a backup catcher. Why not have a specialty player like a pinch hitter there?
No.
All right, well, that made that rather easy.
If I have an all-time team, all right?
By position, I might
Greg
add.
Gross out of York.
And speaks way, highly
great,
of you.
Great respect, by the way, for a long-term career. He had 1,087 hits in his career. And I know he can remember every detail of all 7 home runs. but still one of the top pinch hitters ever.
Yes.
Ranks right there with the Manny Motas, the Vic Davalios, the Smokey Burgesses of the world. No doubt. I don't doubt that at all. Ranks right up there. But I'm picking an all-time team. And on my all-time team, I have on my bench Johnny Callison and Greg Luzinski. I'm sorry. I don't need a pinch hitter. I got those dudes.
I don't need a specialty position.
Okay? What do I need that for? I already have two guys that I would turn to first.
Well, we've already established the fact that you're playing for the long ball and for the possibility of a home run. I'm playing for
base runners.
Oh, wait, Greg Luzinski? You're going to tell me Greg Luzinski is going to be a doubles hitter?
Johnny Callison led the league in doubles.
I'm not arguing that. I did not say Johnny Callison. I did not say that. I said, you're trying to tell me Greg Luzinski is going to be a doubles hitter.
Well, he'll drive the ball to the gap.
Okay. I concede. Did you read the rest of the email, though? There was a good point in there. That the player that was really slighted was Richie Allen.
Richie Allen, which we talked about, because Richie Allen would have brought versatility to the lineup. He can play both first and third. And he was an absolute power hitter. His exit from Philadelphia was not smooth.
And that might be why he wasn't on that list.
That's probably a big reason why he did not make the cut. He did not make the cut. We're going to have Bill King on today talking about the BCS. Bill has his show called 24/7 Sports on Sirius XM. Tomorrow, it looks like we're going toward D. Lynam, who covers the Philadelphia 76ers, to talk about the NBA draft. And you lined up another janitor someplace? Or what? Did you quit? I think he quit.
I'm sorry, I was answering a question about the District 4 All-Star game. Someone was calling in and asked about the District 4 All-Star game.
That's fine. And did you give them an answer?
I did. It was being played. It's being played Friday night, I believe.
Friday night. Yeah. Yeah. Well done.
Thank you.
Did they call up and tell you Greg Rose thing was way off?
No. No, they did not.
He's a good player, but is he one of the top 15 players in the 129-year history of the franchise?
If you're filling a pinch hitter spot, yes.
If I were to start Johnny Callison and Greg Luzinski, right, instead of Ed Delahanty, who do you think I picked to pinch hit? Ed Delahanty. I think I'll pick the Hall of Famer.
Okay, fine. I told you I gave up. I'm done. I give in.
Look, you've been brutalized in this. Even the fans know you're being brutal.
I give.
When I vote for the All Big Ten team, do you think that they have on their kick returners?
I don't know. Do they? I don't know that.
No, all right. They don't. They have place kicker and punter.
But when you do an NFL, when they do NFL teams, there's always that special teams player on it.
Oh, yeah. When you talk about the Pro Bowl?
Yeah.
They pick one guy in the Pro Bowl to fill a special team spot.
Right.
Recognizing it's one-third of the game and so forth.
Right.
Pinch hitting is not one-third of the game.
I knew that was coming next.
It's not. It is 127th of the game. In fact, pinch hitting is 154th of the game.
154th?
Yeah, each team gets 27 at-bats.
154. What frightens me is you've done the math on this.
No, I'm just sitting here and I ran it through my head just now.
That's what I'm saying. Still, it frightens me that you've done the math.
It's 154th of the game. A pinch hitter is 154th of the game.
Okay.
And you want to take a spot that is 154th of the game and give it to a guy for one at-bat.
We've got a backup catcher on this team.
It's 162 games. Catchers get hurt.
Oh. We've got 12 pitchers and a catcher. We have more relievers than starters. There's two technically closers on this team. I give.
If I play interleague with this, I end up using Maddox or Luzinski or Callison.
Now we're going to pull interleague out of it. And if the dog wouldn't, well, you know how to finish the rest of that sentence.
Well, I'm sorry, but in Major League Baseball, there will be an interleague series each of the 54 series next year. It is a reality.
Yes, that in, yes, the, you are.
I am talking in realities. Okay, I know you're used to playing Xbox. Okay, but
listen, if I was playing Xbox, I don't know that Callison would be an available player in that All-Star team. That's unfortunate.
Of course not. Of course not, because you'd want Greg Gross.
Well, I'd download Greg Gross to make sure I had him.
Fine player. Liked him a lot, okay?
He speaks highly of you.
Excellent pitcher. If you were on the show, I think it'd be terrific. He was born in York. Tommy Herr's out of Lancaster.
No relation, by the way. Actually, no. Ironically enough, the first thing I ever did in radio was a sportscast, and Tommy Herr was playing for the Phillies at the time in the sportscast.
Mm-hmm.
That's irony.
Now you have this one. Let's take it to a different level on here.
Okay.
Drew Brees has not signed with the New Orleans Saints. Now, we know, all of us with any common sense, the Saints need to sign Drew Brees. All right, we get it. They need to sign Drew Brees, especially now with all the trouble that they've had. He was franchise tagged by the Saints. Thus, they've been in negotiations ever since. They have until July 16th to work this out, but right now they're at a stalemate. Brees said today that he's confident he'll agree to a deal with the Saints. The players' union reportedly has quietly asked the NFL to investigate if the team is negotiating with its franchise player in good faith. The NFL Players Association recently sent a letter to NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell asking the league to check into Saints negotiations with Brees. A source confirmed that the letter was sent to Goodell. Some members of the NFLPA believe the Saints might be punishing Brees for his vocal role during last year's lockout. Brees was one of the 10 named plaintiffs of the antitrust suit that was filed. Brees did not ask the NFLPA to contact the league. Brees and the Saints have until July 16th to work out a deal. If they don't work out a long-term deal, Brees gets a one-year $16.371 million deal. 1 year. If the league doesn't start an investigation before July 16th, the NFLPA will file a complaint with the National Labor Relations Board. You have to be kidding me. The National Labor Relations Board was put together so that an employee of Sunbury Broadcasting, who is making $15 an hour but should be making $22, and in order to put more bread on the table should be making $22, that's why it was put together. It wasn't put together with the, in the world of common sense to wonder whether Drew Brees should get $16.371 million for this year.
You are 110% correct.
I mean, what is going on around here?
Crazy.
Does anybody have any common sense anymore? I mean, I heard about something the other day where they said, forego your wedding gift, send it to us. What? You have to be kidding me. Who would make that request?
Forego your wedding gift?
Yeah, did you see that?
No.
Yeah. Send it to the campaign. The wedding gift helps the economy. Okay.
Wow.
Wow.
I mean, I'm all for helping the economy, but I mean, not that way.
Well, no, but the wedding gift helps the economy far more than sending it to a political campaign.
Exactly.
Are you kidding me? You chose to run? Find your own cash.
You're on your own now.
You're on your own, dude. We're going to take it to the National Labor Relations Board. He's going to get $16.371 million. The National Labor Relations Board was not formed to settle that case.
And you know, here's the other thing I wonder about that. Why would the players' union ask the league to investigate a contract discussion?
Well, they feel that the Saints are not negotiating in good faith because Brees was one of the 10 named plaintiffs last year in the lawsuit.
No, I understand that, but is that, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. Now, I honestly, I don't remember. I've just went blank for a minute. He still has a contract, technically.
He's been franchise tagged. Right. So the worst he gets out of this is a one-year deal with $16.371 million.
Exactly.
The best he gets out of this is a long-term deal, which they're trying to negotiate right now, some of which will be guaranteed, some of which will be contingent on him making the team.
But he will make at least $16 million.
$16.371 million.
For this 1 year.
Yes.
I'm not feeling a whole lot of pain and suffering and worry that the Saints are acting in good faith.
Well,
I mean, I think $16 million plus is pretty good faith.
But this is, let's remember, Breeze did not ask for this.
I understand. Okay?
So in other words, he's out of this. It's the union.
And the next question you have to ask is, if he did not want this to happen, why is the union stepping in?
People trying to justify their jobs? I don't know.
Well, that's as good a reason as any.
I mean, we have a whole group of them out there, are people trying to justify their jobs.
As good a reason as any, I guess.
I saw that. We're going to take it to the National Labor Relations Board. They were created for this.
The National Labor Relations Board.
Spend your time helping out somebody who needs it to put food on the table. Not somebody who has no issues with it at all.
Wow.
I mean, it would be one thing if Breeze went to them and said, look, guys, I'm having a lot of trouble here. Check with the league on this. Okay, now your union gets involved. But the union doesn't independently go out, hey, whoa, hey, whoa, whoa. Who's running this thing? We're going to take it to the National Labor Relations Board. They weren't designed to look into whether it's an issue about a guy getting $16.371 million. They were actually put into place, I think, to help out, quote, the common man.
Yeah, $16 million is not anywhere near common man money.
No.
That's not even most Powerball winnings.
No. 1-800-795-9565, 1-800-795-9565, and the Lenape Solar Hotline for the beautiful Sunbury Motors Studio, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Back with more after this on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
When you buy anything, isn't it best to see people who've been around for a long time, satisfying customers just like you all the time? Makes sense, doesn't it? So when you're in the market for a quality new or pre-owned vehicle, the only place to go is Sunbury Motors. They've been in business since 1915, partnering up folks just like you with a vehicle that best suits their needs and budget. Their service after the sale can't be beat. And if you like selection, there's none better than Sunbury Motors. Fords, Kias, Lincolns, Mercurys, Hyundais, Sunbury Motors sells them all. Their finance teams are unmatched. They'll be glad to help you secure the affordable option you want on any new or pre-owned vehicle you find on their lots. See the people who've been in business since 1915. Sunbury Motors Ford, Lincoln Mercury, and Hyundai in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com.
Kevin Herr just took up guitar a week ago. Listen to it. Oh, pretty special. Oh, one week and you already sound like that.
Man. It sounds that way as long as I don't plug it into the amp and play to the song. It sounds exactly like that.
Really?
Really.
You're such a multi-talented guy.
I know.
Marlon Byrd was placed on the 50. It was suspended for 50 games for a performance-enhancing drug. All right.
Mm-hmm.
May 5th, I go to Fenway Park And much to my chagrin, he is the starting center fielder. My son and I are sitting there. We're eight rows off the field. I mean, we're in great seats. 100th year of Fenway, feeling good, right? And there's a base hit in the first inning. And he throws this thing back in there. And I looked over, I said, I hope they just threw it like that because he knew there's no way he was stretching it, right? Then there's another hit. Now he has to make a throw. He throws it the same way. I looked around. He does this all day. I said, they have a center fielder with no arm. Then, late in the game, he comes to the plate and has no clue at the plate. And I said, after the first pitch, I said, he'll strike out on three pitches because his weight balance was so far off. That's how close we were. He is suspended for 50 games for taking a performance-enhancing drug. He should have taken triple the amount.
It didn't say what performance.
I can tell you right now, what I saw, his performance wasn't enhanced at all.
Maybe it wasn't for baseball performance. Maybe it was something else that he was doing. I don't know, but that drug didn't work.
I mean, it's like when Ole Miss got caught cheating a few years ago in football. They had 3 wins in the season. I mean, when you can't even cheat right, you're bad. Sarah Bartlett in the news, then Bill King on the BCS changing over to a 14 playoff.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome back to the show. Let's get everybody up to date on what's happening in baseball. Then we'll talk about the BCS and the change to the 14 playoff in 2014. Phillies and Pirates play tonight. Chase Utley activated and will play tonight. And by the way, in Lakewood, single-A Lakewood, Ryan Howard officially begins his rehab stint, which means that by July 18th, he is eligible to join the big club. You didn't know that, did you?
I'm just holding my excitement.
You didn't know that, did you?
I did not know that.
Yeah. Well, he's starting at Lakewood July 18th. He is then allowed. He can only go to July 18th in the rehab. And after that, they have to make a decision. That's when he'd be allowed to be back with a big club. Let's see. Phillies Pirates tonight. Milwaukee leads Cincinnati 8-3, middle of the ninth inning at Great America Ballpark. And the Mets lead the Cubs 4-1. That's in the top of the fifth in the American League. The White Sox lead Minnesota 12-4, Target, bottom of the eighth inning. Bottom of the eighth inning, the Yankees have come back, lead Cleveland 4-3. Another embarrassing night in the majors for not having replay last night. We'll talk about that later.
No, and Andy Pettit was knocked out of that game early on with in the fifth, actually, with a comebacker off his ankle.
Right.
And with CeCe, you know, the issues there, hoping that he's all right, but I haven't heard any more on it.
Kansas City leads Tampa Bay 4-0 in the top of the sixth, and in the bottom of the sixth inning, the Red Sox scored 7 runs in the first inning. They lead Toronto 10-4. And we'll talk about the instant replay buzz again in the Yankee game last night. But first of all, we bring in Bill King. He's the host of 24/7 College Sports on Sirius XM 91. He's covered college football for many, many years. Bill, great to have you with us. Welcome to the show.
Good to be with you, guys.
Great to be with you as well. Well, it certainly has been quite a week, and obviously things have been fast-tracked when it comes to college football. In the end, do you like the solution that was approved by the commissioners and then thumbed up by the presidents?
No, I'm in the minority, vast minority, I would think, there, if you will. I've always been a BCS guy. Now, let me give you a few of my reasons. I think it's incredible drama, and I'm in the radio business, and it's made for fantastic radio since 1998. You know, and I don't know what we've got. I guess if you want to say we've got two more teams added to the fray. It's more fair. It gets two more teams a shot than what we had. But in the end, guys, this wasn't about being fair. This wasn't about letting the little guy in. This was this buckled because the money is overwhelming. That's where we're at today.
Well, in the end, isn't that usually the story, though? The money is overwhelming and it drives the bus?
Well, it hadn't been today. Not in this sport. Not considering this playoff opportunity has been out there for a long time. Now, elsewhere in life, yeah. Yeah, I think we've all got a price, correct. I know where you're going there. But in this case, guys, you know, most of the guys. Now, obviously, Mike Sly has been pro playoff. John Swofford has been pro playoff for some time here. The Lost Dodge at Texas, Bill Powers, the president who represented them, they've been pro playoff for a long time. But there are a bunch of guys who've reversed course on this one.
And is happened to be one of those guys, Jim Delaney?
Yeah, Jim has. And, you know, Harvey Furman even with Nebraska, he was one of the representatives there, obviously, for the Big Ten, or the representative, the chancellor of Nebraska. And I thought it was a good question. The questions from the media yesterday were embarrassingly weak when they had that thing on ESPN. But the good one was a guy picked out Harvey Furman, and he said, "Where's Harvey?" He stood up there and he said, "What do you think?" He said, "Well, we got a third choice." Obviously, his first choice was status quo. His second choice would have been the plus one. But he made it very clear, despite this not being the way we would have gone with it, we're not going to stand in the way of it or attempt to. So,
well, that matches up, though, with the presidential chancellor philosophy in the Big Ten. When the presidents and chancellors in the conference met, they came up with what they thought were their top three choices as to what they thought was one followed by two and three. And he was just following really the pattern of what they had out of their own meetings. That's the exact same order that the other conferences, the presidents and chancellors had in the Big Ten.
Yeah. It's just that Harvey Furman, as an individual, has made it very clear, you know, obviously, despite the league and despite Jim Delaney, that as an individual, he was not for this.
No, he was not. At the same time, I know you like the matchup of a BCS championship game. And on talk shows, it's obviously something fun to talk about. But don't the fans enjoy games? Why we have so many playoff tiers now, the fans enjoy games with stakes.
Well, yeah, I mean, doing the show that I do, I don't know that we've got adequate polling, but I would just assume that if we ran a scientific poll and we took the average fan out there of college football, are you for a playoff? I'd say 80% of them, at least. I could be short. It would say yes. Therefore, there's no question that there's an overwhelming sentiment here for it. And I think it depends on how you spin this thing. Again, I mean, it's, I guess the setup, because it's going to be a committee, which, by the way, is a train wreck. That's a train wreck in and of itself. But the setup in and of itself, meaning the end game, which is four teams instead of two, is really not all that much different. But we're going to call it a playoff. Technically, it will be, because you're going to seed them one through four. And there will be a standalone, unrelated to any bowl game, championship. Kind of the college football's Super Bowl, if you will. And I guess they're going to call it Championship Monday or whatever they're calling it. But so I guess technically it's different. But I've seen a lot of folks who were skeptics here, and probably these are the people who would like to see more eight teams in this thing than four. But it's not enough change to some people in this deal.
You said during the course of that answer with Bill King, by the way, Sirius XM Channel 91, it's the 24/7 sports radios on campus is the show with Bill King. And Bill, you said during that a selection committee is a train wreck. Why is it a train wreck, and what should be used?
Well, I think you need some sort of computer. Now, not one where you have no transparency. That's the big critique right now, is nobody knows how the hell these things work. And who's plugging in a formula and all that kind of stuff. Well, we know who's plugging in the formula, but exactly how they work, that's a problem for many. But first and foremost, if the thinking is we're going to get a committee of ex-coaches and they're somehow more objective than the average dude out there, that's preposterous. These ex-coaches, and God love them, I covered them all and love watching them, but they've got as many biases and regional opinion as anybody on this planet. I think now again, hey guys, that's going to be fantastic radio because let me put in perspective the drama we're talking about.
Sure.
Selection Sunday in basketball, if we really look at it, is not dramatic. I mean, we've got Dick Vitale and Jay Billis on camera barking about some team that was really about the 69th best team, right?
Right.
And that's real compelling to everybody, right? No. We watch it, but it's not. Now we've got four teams. We got a selection committee that's going to do this, apparently. And we're going to have three teams, let's just say randomly one year, that are sitting there at 11-1, 12-1, not in the game. Now, that's drama. I mean, which, again, I think imperfection is good, and another reason why I like the BCS. I always call it perfectly imperfect. It's the most perfectly imperfect thing we've got. That's why it's so ideal. There's drama. There's interest. It draws us in. With this, if indeed this is so fair and so much more clear-cut and so much cleaner, wait until we get there and you've got 11-1 teams sitting there not in this thing.
Right. Well,
and how would you like – now, if they call me, I'd do it. But how'd you like to be a committee member? And I mean, you talk about scrutiny now, big time.
No question. In fact, when I've looked at the NCAA men's basketball tournament, the reality is it's not 68, it's the 37. And the 37, 30 of the 37 are easy calls.
Right.
I mean,
right.
30 out of the 37 are easy calls. It's the last seven, and probably for the committee, there's actually probably much more work in the seeding part of it than it is in the selection part of it. Because those last seven are hard, but then you seed all of them. And that's what when I've looked at the NCAA, that's what I've always thought. 30 out of the 37 at-larges were actually relatively easy calls.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this one's going to be fun. And then you have, you've got the Big 12, which, I mean, if I'm them, I'm not expanding. Number one, I don't know who I'd go. Now, if Notre Dame wants to come, I would do it. And that
sure.
Someday that may be possible because we know that the Lost Stars and Jack Swarbrick are very close. But at the end of the day, they're not even playing a league championship game. So we're going to have people squawking about uniformity. Again, all healthy. It's just my reply is this isn't as clean and perfect as everybody that just has to have a playoff thinks it is.
One of the faults with the BCS is that if you play a game in late November, this is before the Big Ten had its championship game. You recall Ohio State won 51 days before they played another game.
Yeah.
By having the conference championship game, that now gets moved to the first weekend of December, and now you're probably only going to have a 3.5 to 4 week gap before a semifinal game. Is it possible that we will have a better, far more competitive in-sync championship game because the two teams playing in it will have played the week before?
Very good point. And I got to admit now, sitting there 6 weeks, I mean, you got a chance to be arrested and reinstated by then, at that point. Hey, down in the South, we know what that's like. But, I always found that irritating. What was also irritating is this last year, I'm at a grocery store January 1st, and I'm thinking, this is no college football today. Now, that's blasphemy, is what that is. I never liked that when we lost January 1 as a vital, poll day.
Agreed. But, I agree with that completely, as a matter of fact.
Yeah.
January 1st.
Yeah,
and I guess the way this works is that one of the games will be December 31st, and the other game will be January 1st.
Yeah, and then it's that next Monday, provided you've got a week length. So mm-hmm. It starts on 12 and works all the way back to about
right.
8 or something like that. But anyway. Yeah, I mean, there's lots of imperfections there to talk about when it comes to the BCS. I'll say this, though. As far as I know, watching every one of those games, covering every one of those games, I don't remember walking out of any national championship, BCS 1 versus 2, and thinking, you know what, if they'd have, you know, had only 3 weeks to prepare, I think something different would have happened. Now, you know, how do we know it wouldn't have? I guess we'll never know the truth on that. But it never occurred to me that, for example, Team A would have really beat Team B if now, do you get rusty and everything else? And you know, particularly offensively, I've always debated every one of these games. I remember just trying to stand on the highest mountain back in 08 down in Miami. In Oklahoma, if you'll recall, guy, offensively that year, they were revved up as well as any offense I can remember in recent memory. I mean, they were scoring crazy pinball numbers. And they're playing a Florida team that, frankly, a lot of people thought was the underdog in that game. And so I remember, I remember sitting there going, do not take the football. After being off this long offensively, oh, no, offense is continuity. Defense, you can just go sit them to a certain extent. And I remember, obviously, it was a three and out early there, and I'm not sure that had anything to do with the end of the game. But that much time off, guys, kills offenses in particular. And that's always bothered me.
Yeah. You have said in your time, and Penn State fans will obviously argue with you about this because they'll tell you that here that the 94 offense is the greatest offense they've seen here. You say it's the 83 Nebraska offense that actually lost its title game when Tom Osborne had the guts, by the way, to go for two points.
Yep.
Why 83 Nebraska? I mean, I know the names off the top of my head because they played Penn State that year, but, you know, why do you think?
Boy, I just thought with the ability of a quarterback that was a multi, you know, a dual threat quarterback like that, as athletic as that team was offensively. And I remember watching, I've got to say, guys, of, you know, major bowl games, and I was just trying to get my way out of college at that time in 84. But as far as major bowl games, that's the most shocked I've been as far as an upset probably. I just with my mouth open and Miami's up big with Bernie Kosar and all that. I just remember thinking this can't be real. But just offensively, not only with the quarterback, but you're talking wide receivers, you're talking running backs, you're talking a massive offensive line, and you're right, going for two. Where back then, if he kicks the field goal and ties it, they win the national championship. Now let's go to Penn State. 1993, I think it was. I've been to so many Fiesta Bowls. They run together.
Yeah.
But was it? But I'm talking about the Tennessee game.
Oh, that's the Citrus Bowl in 1993. That set up the 94 year.
Yeah. Correct. Because a couple of years prior, it was the Fiesta Bowl, right?
Right. So. Exactly.
But anyway, because I remember the opening kickoff, but Dale Carter did not jump on the ball, and Penn State got you know, one play, 7-0.
Right.
But I remember that game, and Heath Shuler was turning pro. That was a Tennessee team that was real hot. And after Tennessee got a 10-0 lead, that same Penn State team that, you know, developed into the team you're talking about just crunched the balls. I mean, physically mashed them. So I've got immense respect for that group because I watched kind of the makings of what that was going to be. That's a compelling argument, and I also think that 92 Bama defense.
I was about to talk to you about Gene Stallings' 92 Bama defense. What made that group special? Because I think they did some things that turned some heads when they beat Miami for the title.
Well, if you think about it, they had, and again, it's hard to bring up the name Jerry Sandusky, but before this huge, you know, deal and everything, that was a name that we would talk about defensive coordinators. And Charlie McBride at Nebraska, I covered his last Fiesta Bowl. Nebraska, by the way, same story, played Tennessee. That'd have been 99.
Right.
But they had a defensive coordinator, Brother Oliver, Bill Oliver, who's well-known in the South, one of the really big names as far as defensive coordinators, a Bama guy. And they had fantastic talent. I'll give you an example. Antonio Langham was a cornerback. Sam Shade was back there at safety. They had Derek Oden and Antonio London at linebacker. Their two defensive ends, Curry and Copeland, went very high in the draft. So it was a lot of personnel there, but they were just wicked. I mean, just physical, fast. And you also remember that team had a quarterback, Jay Barker, who it was a good college quarterback, but was not a prospect. And all they did was run the ball. not like they had a real fancy offense. But I thought almost single-handedly that defense won a national championship for them that year.
Was that, that was the one where Teague literally just took the ball right out of out of Thomas's.
George Teague was in that. I left him out. He was in that second
George
area.
Teague,
Oh, fantastic. Yeah, that's one of those plays you don't see a lot.
No, I think you see one of those every maybe every 10 years. Where you make a play like that, especially when the guy catching it thinks he's the greatest thing on the planet and all of a sudden realizes that he's running without something. Bill, it was an absolute pleasure. We hope to get you back on the show again soon. Bill, by the way, it's 24/7 Sports Radio's On Campus with Bill King, SiriusXM Channel 91. Bill, it was an absolute pleasure. Thank you for your thoughts and for being with us today.
Hey, guys, another time I'll tell you the story about how East Tennesseans went nuts when Penn State came down and got Leroy Thompson. We'll do that one day.
I remember that well, by the way.
Yeah, we'll save that one for another time.
Bill King, thanks so much. Bill, 24/7 Sports on XM Sirius 91. We appreciate that very much. We'll come back with more of the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK, the home of Kevin Hur, after this. Strong segment by you, I thought.
I thought so, too.
I like the praise whenever I can. I was going to ask him whether he thought Greg Gross should be the pinch hitter in the all-time Phillies team.
Nah, that was all right. Your questions were fine.
Thanks.
Although I'm actually happy about this. He may not have been so happy about it, but I think this is at least a step in the right direction. It's not perfect, but it's better.
Oh, well, no, I mean, he and I have completely different opinions about this.
No, I know. I mean, this is not the perfect solution by any means, and I do agree with him. You have to wonder, and we talked about this morning on The Mark. We had a caller call in and asked, you know, the Bobby Bowden, for example, where's his loyalty going to be when push comes to shove, and you have to pick the number four team, and it's between.
Yeah, but it's going to be 15 people doing this. This is not going to be done by Bobby Bowden. There are going to be 15 people there doing this. I know that some people have talked about eight. I was always a proponent of eight, but I changed up on that when everybody went to the conference championship games. When the conference championship games came up, to me, that's the extra tier of
playoffs. That's a good
point. That's the extra
tier. But it's not the end all
either. I don't know what you mean.
You wouldn't have to win it to continue on, is what I mean. You wouldn't you wouldn't have to win it.
There's never been a BCS team I can recall that lost the conference championship game.